This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest. Not far from here, it's not far away, but if you come, I know a place where we'll be alone, and we'll talk of life and the way love used to be. I know a place not far away, and we'll find a way through the city streets. We'll find a way through the mad rushing crowd, and we'll talk about the way love used to be.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Coming to you from beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, my beautiful studio Trinidad World Recording. Thank you for listening this week, everybody. Boy, the summer heat has set in. The sweat, the temperatures rising, Stu and Blue, the full band, have been with me. Out there visiting all of you, playing shows for you in Texas this summer. It's been so great to see everybody at the Firehouse, Cypress Saloon, Brewster Street in Corpus. Gosh, we revisited the old Barley House in Dallas, Texas. Big D, thanks for coming out and making a great show the other night. So good to be back in my hometown of Dallas to play a show. Fantastic stuff. Things are going well out there. Well, me alone here, folks, thinking, musing on the podcast, enlightening your musical life. After all, I've been out there on the front lines. Now I am back with the news. Welcome, my friends. Our thoughts and wishes go out to our good friend Kurt South. You know him. You love him. Here on the podcast, his dark didactic views and points of thought and wisdom. Always welcome here on the podcast. Always a little something to bring me down from my rosy perch, my lofty expectations of life and career. Kurt South to keep me grounded. Oh, man, he's had numerous family things, kids, work, all kinds of stuff going on. So our thoughts are with Kurt South. We look forward to getting him back here on the podcast very soon. Oh, man. Speaking of talking about stuff in the van, discussing issues that we as musicians grapple with, that's what this show is all about, all after all. Man, I continually have difficulty. Difficulty, and some of you fans out there, some of you musicians, email me. Let me know if I'm crazy or if I'm onto something here. The big difficulty with me is, as I forge ahead in these uncertain musical times, playing music, not knowing where it's going a lot of the time, man, the fact of keeping score is what we're going to discuss here in the first segment of the podcast. Now, what I mean by that is in the recent past, I, Phil, how you doing out there, would make a recording. So you see, a recorded song, album, something like that. And then, lo and behold, we would send that CD to our friends at Crystal Clear in Dallas. They're a mom-and-pop distributor over there in Dallas. That's why when you went to Hastings in the day or to Sound Warehouse, CD World, and all sorts of other great businesses that now hardly carry CDs or are no longer in business, you know, my albums would be in there. It was a revolution, man. being able for me to walk into a store and see my nicely shrink-wrapped, tastefully appointed, barcode encoded CD on the racks there. It would impress so many of my friends, members of my own family, who thought I'd kind of, oh, just gotten off the right track, would go into a Hastings, and they'd see that, you know, shiny Phil World CD sitting there, and they would think, man, I saw Phil's CD, or Phillips CD, as I'm known in the family, there in the record store. It would just, man, my credibility at Thanksgiving would just go through the roof from being on the shelves out there, for sale, right there alongside whoever else was in the peas, the Pretenders, Prince, etc. But man, I knew how to keep score. We'd sell some CDs every month. I'd get a check once a month from Crystal Clear, with a roughly itemized list. You know, hey, we sent this many to Tower Records in Austin, Waterloo in Austin, you know, Hastings in Amarillo or Nacogdoches, College Station, something like that. And so you'd have a rough idea by the reorders of your disc how many you were selling, and there'd be a corresponding check with it. Very fun to get. Very fun indeed. And the checks were not nothing, man. I mean, it wasn't, you know, I don't know. We'd have some months where we might sell, even in the early going, 100, 200, 300 a month or something. I mean, depending on if you had a new album out there. And then after I did Phil Comes Alive and Suburban Legends there, Suburban Legends, maybe 1999, people still bought CDs. And so I probably had three albums out. And they were in all the stores, and boy, these itemized lists would come in every month with a check, and it was pretty fun, and I looked forward to keeping up. And I would sort of, you know, not that I would base my thoughts or career on how big the checks were, but it was kind of nice to know that, hey, people are really reordering this album or this, you know, you could kind of follow along, see how people were responding to it by how many is sold. And man, it has gotten very hard to keep score in that way now, with so little money coming in from any actual CD sales. Of course, we do have iTunes, we do have MP3 downloads and stuff like that. But as you and I know, as we discuss on the show all the time, you can get them free anywhere, which I don't care. I'm all about, hey man, just give me $20 for the whole catalog. Just, you know, whatever, give me something. Even if you don't want to give me something, share it with a friend. I encourage you all to do that. Spread the gospel of P2 out there, right? It's all about getting it out there. But I tell you what, the flip side of that is there's just not a lot to go on to let me know if I'm on the right track. You know, to shoot you straight, man, these last couple records we've made, Mark of the Human Hand, Bullfighter Returns, all you fans coming to the show love it. You request the songs, you know, they get downloaded off the site. You know, I see people enjoying it. But outside of that, there's not any indication of growth. I mean, there's not some little, oh man, sometimes you'd see there'd be a store in maybe Amarillo or in South Padre Island or something where maybe you've sold like 10 Phil World albums. You'd be like, what the heck? Like, who's down there, you know? Sometimes you'd follow up on something like that. It was a lead anyway. Maybe it was nothing, but there was some information coming back, you understand. And now, yes, I get your nice notices on Facebook, good show the other night, Phil, that kind of thing. But none of it really tells me how I'm doing with any particular project. I guess I know the general idea, of Phil and the full band. You know, this totally independent guy, this band that has their own studio, he rolls around, he writes all his own songs, plays kick-ass shows, hopefully. We do our best, what can I say? The whole idea of the band, y'all are nice enough to let me know you enjoy it. But any particular product or song or album, like how it really goes over with anybody, is really hard for me to pick up on how well it does. Does that make sense? There's no spike in sales or nothing seems to be more well received than any of the other albums. It's just, hey, it's another little piece of the full band out there for us to chew on and enjoy. Great. You know, Kurt and I were talking on a recent podcast. When you have shows that are $10 a show, it's hard to get new people in there to see the band, to grow the business. That's what we're trying to do after all, to grow the business. Indeed, this Barley House show we played in Dallas was free. Free show, had a ton of people in there, a ton of people who hadn't even never seen us before. So we went in there, had some old fans as well. Thanks for coming out. A lot of great folks. But they were appreciative, you know, hey, free show, and it's just kind of a cozy neighborhood bar kind of thing. Very, very fun. But that was cool to kind of see some of these younger folks in there who probably wouldn't go see us otherwise. Enjoying the show. But, man, keeping score, increasingly difficult. And I wonder if with the future approaching, oh, it's here, isn't it? Of course, it's the present if it's already here, right? How to keep score in the new age? How to know if, man, this new record we made is really making headway, this song? I don't know. It just gets played on the radio a little bit. Our last couple of records, people say, hey, the song sounds cool, whatever. Maybe it just doesn't have the impact or something. I don't know. There's so much music out there. There's so many new bands all the time. The only impact you can have, maybe, is that initial impact. Being young, being a new band. I mean, there's always some new band that's, you know, selling lots of tickets at Billy Bob's and, yeah, or, you know, that comes out and that's the impact. Hey, have you heard of this guy? Man, he's packing them at this place. And that's it. And then if you're a fan of that guy, you're going to kind of be somewhat interested or enjoy kind of whatever he does after that. I don't know. Maybe that's not true. But email me in your thoughts. How to keep score. All I know, man, is I go out and I play these shows. I see the same faces at each show. The same wonderful faces. God bless you all. But it's hard to get the new people in there, you know. I need ideas here, people. I need ideas. If you're down there listening in Corpus Christi or down there in Houston, here in Fort Worth, or abroad, how to draw new people in there. Man, you can't send them emails they don't want and spam them. Let's send them a free track. Nobody cares about that. I'm wondering how to draw people to us more. And of course, that's what we're all trying to do, right? To draw people to the band. Oh, we do it one or two people at a time, but how to have all this, I mean, my whole catalog, all this existing music out there, how to have it just available and people say, hey, man, I got it. It didn't cost me much, and now I'm enjoying it as well. If you have any ideas, let me know. And, man, that's one way to keep score. You know, seeing how many of those drop cards go out the door, how many people are downloading things off the site. But it's hard to tell who it is. It's hard to get any return business on that. I mean, once you have the whole Pritchett catalog, there's nothing else to buy. It's kind of a one-shot deal. Pay your $20, you get caught up on everything, then I got to make a new album for you to buy something else. But, you know, yeah, the end result is we go around, we play shows for the same faces, we come home, and that's it. I get the occasional very nice note on Facebook or something like, hey, man, great show. I mean, that was another thing. Early on in the early dawn of the internet we were around, we had a, you know, like a bulletin board page on our website where you could type in the box and then it would be printed, you know, in a long list of, it's kind of a forum, you know, and then I would occasionally respond to things. But this was before, you know, MySpace, Facebook, anything like that. So people were out there bored at work like we all are, you know, and looking for places to find little bits of news on things we're interested in. So people would go to my website, you know, Phil's website, and hey, great show here. But man, there was all kinds of activity on that site. On my philpritchett.com forum page would say there'd be stuff about, hey man, what kind of guitars you playing, or, you know, what's he cut his hair or something, all kinds of crazy stuff. I would read it, you know, occasionally and just be like, what is all this? But it was fascinating. It was giving me some feedback and some knowledge that, hey man, people are out there listening and paying attention and commenting on things, and that's good. I must be onto something here. I think it's ironic that we have all these social media tools now with Facebook and Twitter and things. But man, some of it seems real cold. We're all getting so many notifications every day. I don't respond to much of them, and I don't expect y'all to respond to mine either. I'm certainly not asking y'all to send me a bunch of compliments or anything like that. But it is, you know, you post, hey, we're going to do this. Hey, we're recording this. We're going to be here tonight and all that. And I don't know. I don't get much response from that. If you're like me, you're just going to see the email. Oh, Phil's in Houston tonight. Cool. You're not going to write me a review of my last show. I'm not expecting that. But, you know, we used to get a lot like that. We used to get a good portion of people opining on things and stuff like that. So it's a challenge for me as a guy who writes tons of songs, plays tons of shows, to encourage that kind of activity. Everyone's like, man, you got to encourage fan activity. You got to encourage it. Man, all I know what to do is write and record and put it out there, make it available, let you know it's there. But it's interesting with nothing to buy, save a few iTunes downloads and things. Thank you very much for buying those, by the way. You don't get a lot of feedback on what you're doing. Now at the shows, of course, you do get to talk to people. You know, it's great. Somebody says, man, it's a great show and whatever. But that's really kind of out in the field like that, I guess is what I'm saying. Despite all these tools we have online, I don't get just a whole lot of feedback. Now on the podcast, that's a different story. That's been something that's been very interesting. The emails I do get, the response I do get from people are about the show. People, you know, hearing, hey man, you were talking about this, or I think that's right, or you're crazy, or South is an idiot, or whatever. So, I enjoy that part of it. So what should I take from that? You tell me, email me, phil@philpritchett.com, and let me know, hey Phil, I think, you know, maybe contact us this way. You're the fan after all. Hell, let me know what to do. But I think it's been interesting that more so than any of the music I record or shows I play, the thing people do seem to be responding to lately is the podcast. There's a lot of talk and information, of course. So, let me know what to take away from that. How can I keep score in the new world? Well, I'm very excited about our next segment today on the podcast. We're going to go across the hall here in our large building here and get our old friend John Reynolds. Man, he has filmed videos for me. He did the Bullfighter video. He did the High Tide in the Heartland video. You've seen it on YouTube 100 times. Thank you very much. He also did that new Kurt South video that came out very, very well. He's a filmmaker. And man, just an authority on movies. Man, I'm on the Netflix. I get the Netflix, man. Family. We're always watching movies. But I have some concerns about movies moving forward. Man, it's all we're going to get now, just Spider-Man 8, Batman 6, the Three Stooges movie. Just stuff that already has been. You know, I think of a movie like Forrest Gump. That wasn't that long ago, was it? What was that, 10, 15 years ago? My question is always the same. I'm like, man, are they even trying to make movies like that anymore? Just, you get Hanks in there, you get a great actor and a great story, and you put it all together. Where did Hollywood abandon that concept? Or have they abandoned it? I don't know. But man, it's just Transformers and superheroes and Robin Hood. And I was just kind of, man, haven't we seen this stuff? How many times can we go see this stuff? It's the same, man. So join us for our next segment here. We're going to talk some film talk with our good friend John Reynolds next.
And we'll talk about the way love used to be.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth. All you bands out there, come record at the studio like so many have. Call me, 817-733-5256. Our good friend Brian Sachs and the boys were in here recording last week. Brian Hunt, all the fellows from Beaumont down there. The great Seth Jones has been in here tracking some things. Adrian Escovedo. A lot of stuff going on at Trinidad here last few weeks. A lot of fun. A lot of different kinds of stuff getting recorded. Well, our last segment talking about keeping score. How do you keep score? How do you know what's going on in this chaotic industry? You know, without record sales to go by to let you know that you're making the right decision. Well, the same could be said, or could it be said, for films. I love movies as much as anyone. So who better to bring in to opine on the state of the music industry, state of the movie industry, than a filmmaker himself, a man who has shot videos for great ones like myself and Kurt South, our man down the hall, videographer, film enthusiast, John Reynolds. How you doing, John?
I'm doing well.
Thanks for coming across the hall today. You're finding the wherewithal just to walk across the hall and say, you know what, I'm going to sit down and help Phil out with some movie perspective.
I had to walk through two doors.
I know, it's incredible. Well, we always talk about films. John sees everything, unlike myself. Just as you'd come into the studio here and see racks of vinyl albums on Phil's wall, you go into John's office, you go into his room at his house, millions of DVDs, videotapes, laser discs.
A dying
Betamax
piece of media.
That's right. Film hanging on. But man, my question is, you know, sometimes people talk about, man, music today sucks, you know. What happened? And as me and Kurt South have sat here so many times before and talked about, I said, well, you know, once the labels started getting really rich, they started formulating things that they thought the public would buy. That's how you ended up with some homogenous kind of stuff out there. And man, I'm a big movie fan, like I said, grew up on it as you did. But it seems to me, man, like Forrest Gump was on the other night. I mentioned this to you earlier. And you just kind of go, man, Forrest, that was a long time ago. We had Forrest Gump and Oscar, you know, Tom Hanks.
When they made movies.
Yeah, it was the Expanse. You know, Zemeckis had gone out and he'd found this book, this script. He turned it into something. It was an original idea. It just, you know, in the last 10 years, you look at the winners of Oscars and with varying degrees of, you know, stuff people sees and stuff people don't really see. My overall point is Forrest Gump. Are they even trying to make movies like that anymore?
Yeah, I don't think they're trying to make movies like that.
I mean, it's just we're gonna have a Three Stooges movie, another Batman, another Spider-Man.
Exactly. Well, even now they're making movies based on board games. Battleships coming
out. Just anything. Anything that
Candyland.
Maybe people already have a reference to.
No, that's all it is.
What do you attribute
Hollywood
that to?
Hollywood is completely just trying to take from, you know, our childhood, you know, build everything off nostalgia.
Right.
And, you know, all these movies that came out this summer about the 80s, like the A-Team.
Yeah, I mean, why would someone make
G.I.
a movie?
Joe.
I mean, just think about how stupid the A-Team was. I mean, it was okay. We liked to watch Mr. T.
Yeah.
His Mohawk. I mean, we can turn this into
what
something.
What they want 30-year-olds that have kids to take their kids to go see this, of something they remember from high school or from
the
junior high.
The A-Team was a stupid, violent, dumb show. I mean, I just don't understand how some guy, when they have their production meeting, what do you got? Just, I've got it. What do you got there, Tim?
B.A. Baraka.
We make a movie about the A-Team. And how the executives just go, hey, how come we haven't thought of this?
Exactly.
I mean, are they not writing scripts anymore?
No, they're not. No, they are writing scripts. I think what the thing is that they can't make a bet on a movie and spend $100 million on a movie on a property that they didn't already have a fan base.
Right.
So that's the problem with why there's no really new stories or anything new that's out there.
Exactly.
They're redoing or rebooting or they're taking things that already have a fan base and just throwing it back out there at us.
But does A-Team have a fan base?
I think it does have a little bit of fan base.
It has some name recognition.
Yeah.
People name recognition, right? I mean,
G.I. Joe has a fan base, and they went out and saw it, and it was the biggest piece of crap I've seen in years.
Yeah.
And but I went and saw it, but I saw it because I loved that toy as a kid.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're the target audience. You're to blame for all this.
I guess you go see
all the movies.
But what's happened is that we're not seeing those movies anymore. We were burnt out.
We
were burnt too bad on destroying, I guess, our childhood. That sounds kind of dramatic, but making us see things that we loved in our childhood, and we go out and we see it, we expect to get that same kind of feeling.
Well, sure.
We're not kids anymore. We see through the crap, and it's just crap, and people aren't going out to see these things anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, I mean, you better say, well, you know, these are just summer blockbuster popcorn fair, but even back 10 years ago, man, summer popcorn fair was like
Back to the Future.
Like Jurassic Park, you know, it was just a mind-blowing story. Spielberg, E.T., or something. I mean, it was like, that was your standard popcorn fare. It wasn't just, we remade a bunch of Charlie Chaplin movies, except now he's a bodybuilder. I'm just kind of like,
do you want to feel old?
Yeah, please.
Back to the Future is 25 years ago this summer.
Well, when are we going to rehash that?
Well, I'm sure they're already working
on it. You know, we got to make a remake of Back to the Future. You know, it's just like... I don't get it. I mean, and you know, I'm a fan of Tim Burton and people like that.
Oh,
but
God, he's a hack.
Well, you know, I mean, his recent stuff, you know, you're just like, man, why do we need another Wonka movie? I mean, why would it be Willy Wonka? How can you beat, the original? I mean, it had its moments, I guess, but I'm just like, why would we waste so much time and money to put this into
Hollywood thinks it's a safe bet.
Epic of film and it just, I don't know, man. I mean, I was looking at the list of Oscar winners from the last several years, and I know you see a lot of them. I know a lot of these are fine movies, but they're by and large, you know, movies like Million Dollar Baby and Slumdog Millionaire. Maybe they're movies that nobody saw, really. What else won? Like Traffic. What were some of the
Traffic,
others?
Traffic, sure.
Did it win?
Traffic, Crash was
Crash. Well, Crash was what I was thinking of. Crash. Yeah. Just stuff that, you know, I'm not saying that the best picture should always be, you know, Rocky or something, but I mean, maybe that's good old days syndrome. There were films that maybe everyone saw and loved, that would win Best Picture, more or less. I mean, and Gump was like that.
I think you have two different kinds of films. You have films that have a wide audience, which would be these summer blockbuster remakes of whatever, comic book movies that have that kind of throw out, that collect a lot of big age group. And then you have these niche movies that do win the awards, that do win Best Picture.
Right. Like The Hurt Locker, you know.
Hurt Locker. That kind of carve out a little niche.
Right.
It's finding movies like Forrest Gump, that we were talking about, that talks to both groups.
Right.
It talks to, you know, families can bring their kids and it tells a good moral tale.
Yeah.
But then also it has maybe an artistic side to it, or something that's a unique side to it that grabs the Oscar ear as well.
Right.
So,
well, what have you seen lately? What are some other thoughts you have? Film, is it ever going to go back to like original stories? Of course, online there's other opportunities to showcase talent and stuff like that. Is there a market? Is there a future for guys doing that kind of stuff?
Well, I think over the last week or so, Inception came out, which is an original story, and it did
very really, unusual.
Yeah, it did really well, and I think that'll hopefully Hollywood people start looking at that, going, "Hey, we can come up with something original. Give Christopher Nolan, the guy who did Batman, $100 million, go make something original, and people will go out and see it." Uh-huh. On the flip side of that, The Sorcerer's Apprentice came out, which is Nicolas Cage, you know, it's a Disney movie. It's based off that 5-minute little scene from Fantasia.
Oh,
with Mickey Mouse dancing around with the brooms.
Right.
And, you know, they spent $100 million on that, and it did terrible. I think it did like $17 million or something, which I know that sounds terrible.
Right.
We would love to have $70 million, but that's a bomb for them.
Yeah, right, right.
So I don't know. Maybe people are just wising up to it. You asked me what's something new that I've seen. Nothing. I have seen nothing worth a damn.
Yeah.
In a long time.
That is...
I'm hungry. I go back to movies from the 70s. I go to I go see Woody Allen, or I'll go pick up, I don't know. Just anything Jack Nicholson in it between 1970 and, you know, the mid 80s.
Sure.
I'll grab that.
Chinatown.
Chinatown, sure.
You know, I mean, one of my favorite guys to come out was Wes Anderson, you know, when he came out with Bottle Rocket, Rushmore, The Royal Tenenbaums. I loved those movies. And, man, you want to talk about a guy with – you're watching a movie where everything is in place, just everything from the colors.
He's an auteur.
Yes. I mean, you're really going inside someone's world here.
Mm-hmm, completely.
And a story that is unusual, that is odd.
Fantastic,
but I feel like I feel like his recent films, while I love Fantastic Mr. Fox, but I feel like they haven't, they just don't get, maybe people don't go see those movies.
Yeah,
they don't do as well, and so the Hollywood points to that and says the great Wes Anderson, look, no one goes to see his artistic vision. So
I think what happens is that he falls victim to his own success. So he had success with these eccentric, quirky movies, and then they just write him a big check, go do whatever you want, and they let the reins off him. When sometimes a little bit of Hollywood reins holding them back makes them make better films.
Sure.
And I know that's, you know, I'm an artist, it sounds terrible for me to say that, but a little bit of structure would help, I think, help him.
Some of those guys.
In some of his films, yeah.
You know, another guy was M. Night Shyamalan, who came out with, man, one of the best movies in the last 20 years, The Sixth Sense was just an instant classic. I mean, I go, man, this is one of the greatest.
This is what new films will look like in the future.
Yes. I mean, just, and man, and since then, he had a couple other ones that were pretty good, and then, man, he's just been in a slump, man, and it comes up, and now he did the comic book deal, Airbender,
yeah.
And, no good.
And, oh, it's, I, 3D. I've not seen it,
yeah,
so it's
right.
hard for me to say, but it doesn't also speak to me, but it seems that the feedback is bad on that one.
But you said you were talking about, you've seen some cool things people are doing, like online, short films, that there's more originality and more stuff going on there.
Yeah, so Phil and I talked about this, and so there are three things that I think that you should go out and see in the comfort of your own home.
Please.
All right,
please.
There's three things.
Because I look at Netflix, I'm just like, wait, what do? I just rent Star Wars again? What do I do? I mean, you know, Gump.
Godfather.
I'm just like the Godfather. How many times can I see it?
Let's watch that again.
Right.
There's a couple things that caught my eye. There's a short film called The Last 3 Minutes.
I saw that. You referred me to that. Man, very cool idea.
I think it's 4 minutes long.
So
you're not going to really, you know, don't get popcorn and sit down and, you know, spend time with your, you know, girl on the couch and watch.
Of course,
this.
If you tell them anything about The Last 3 Minutes, it ruins it because it's only 3 minutes long.
Right.
So you just have to go see The Last 3 Minutes.
Last 3 Minutes. So you can look that up. There's another one called Lady Blue Shanghai.
Yes.
And it's a David Lynch film.
Great David Lynch, one of your favorites.
You take him or leave him, and I take him. I think he's great and he has a lot to offer. And then there's another one called Tell Tale. And it is based on the Edgar Allan Poe film, book, you know, A Telltale
Heart. Right.
What's interesting about those first two, The Last 3 Minutes and Lady Blue, those are both commercials, which is very strange that I'm sitting here in a
Last 3 Minutes was a commercial for that camera?
Last 3 Minutes is a commercial for the camera that it was shot on. It was paid for by Canon.
Yeah.
And it was shot with a little bitty D5 mark.
To show how camera. Cool it can, how it can be used
exactly.
to do cool shots and things. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one is the David Lynch ad, and it's for Dior, and it's for their bag or whatever the heck they sell.
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's kind of weird. It shows that the big money is not out there for artists to really create original stories and create things. They're actually finding it through commercial work, which is very strange. I mean, this is a crazy thing.
Well, that's all those Michelangelos got painted.
That's true. They
the
were
Pope
all
or someone
they
would just say, hey, we'll give you food for a year if you paint the Sistine Chapel. You know,
exactly.
So, you know, maybe that's what's behind
it's
all great work.
It's weird that corporate America now is funding the arts in this way.
That's right.
Where Hollywood, which they are supposed to be funding the arts, and I'm doing quotes with my fingers
right now,
they don't. They're just trying to make a buck, and they're trying to get as many people in there that opening weekend, and they're trying to sell as many of those DVDs or whatever to parents to give their kids.
Is there still a lot of long money in Hollywood on the DVDs and stuff, or is that diminished with online
DVD
stuff?
Sales have dropped off 50% this year.
Oh, wow.
And that was their cash cow. That's what they made money off
of.
And people just aren't buying DVDs anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that wall that you talked about that I have at my house
that's
completely covered from floor to ceiling is worth nothing.
It's
absolutely worth nothing.
But so, you have so many great memories of going in there and paying $15 for each one of them, don't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. I'll go watch this again.
Yeah, right. Watch it.
Exactly. Yeah. Do I actually need Sleeper?
How are they doing? How are they
doing?
Yeah. How are they doing the movies now? It used to be just, you know, Tom Cruise signs on for a movie, he gets $20 million. He gets $20 million a movie. Do all these actors just have to kind of take a back end now just to get stuff made?
I think the whole thing is back end. Yeah.
Yeah. They get a lower up front. Like, we'll give you $1 million
right.
But
if you go and look and see the movies that are coming out, there's not that many with those big A-list stars as much anymore. They're running out of money. So they don't have 20 million, 17 million to give Angelina Jolie to come in and do an action film.
Right.
They give her a little bit up front, but then she gets the back end. But now the back end's worth less, and her star power is worth less.
Mm-hmm.
So what ultimately ends up happening is that it comes back down to the story, and that's why we all go see movies anyways, to the story. So it'll work its way back around, hopefully.
Right. Well, it seems like you could make, rather than trying to spend $50 million, $100 million on a movie, that these studios could be going out and giving a good number of young guys $1 million or $2 million to make one.
Hollywood, my office.
Is that just
is
too
located,
small? Well, you know, this is what I've been saying about the music business for years. Like, well, we only got enough budget for put out 10 records a year. I'm like, you're spending $250,000 on each record.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, you could go get guys like me, write us all a check for $30,000. I said you could sign 100 guys.
Exactly.
Or something. I mean, or 10 guys and not nearly have the expense. And then be just spreading your risk and just have a chance of something really floating to the surface. Maybe all those things don't really get made, but.
You know, good music is good music. Good stories are good stories.
Right.
Those live on forever. Mm-hmm. The star power, the things exploding, things like that. That's fun. That lasts a certain amount of time.
And it always looks dated a few years later.
Sure,
you're kind of like,
or whatever.
Yeah.
But it all comes back to the story. And if they can get back focused on the story again, then people start going back to the movie theater. Going back to the movie theater, we've got 3D. We didn't talk about 3D.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a whole nother thing.
Whole nother thing. Maybe for a whole nother show as we're running out of time. Well, speaking of films, we're going to talk about a great artist, something I can't get past Kurt Sapp when he's in here. We're going to talk about Amy Mann and The Vault. She's had her music in a lot of movies. But man, the first record of hers I heard a lot was The Forgotten Arm. So we're going to take a listen to some of those tracks off The Forgotten Arm, Amy Mann and The Vault next.
Cotton candy once came on the midway that spring when I saw.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. All our thanks to our John Reynolds for dropping by with a little movie talk there. Gosh, what's next, man? Batman 5? We're going to start remaking the Flintstones movies again or something? I shudder to think the future of Hollywood. Yikes, where are the original stories, I say? Well, well, well. None of you folks out there in P2 podcast land. Yes, I'm talking to you out there, all the ships at sea, London, England out there. You email me all the time, all the folks down in Houston, Corpus, and here in the DFW Metroplex, East Texas. You don't need me to point you any directions when it comes to music. Point you to Waylon or Willie or something. What am I going to tell a bunch of you guys and gals about that? So bear with me here while we get into a little Amy Mann. A modern artist. Phil, you're always doing old artists. You're always doing these old classic rock things. No, come on. Get somebody new. Somebody new. Somebody current. Man, I fell in love with this Amy Mann stuff a few years ago. I got this, her album, The Forgotten Arm. She's like this boxer in her spare time. Really pretty, high cheekbones, blonde hair. She did all the music for that weird movie, Magnolia, that Reynolds loves so much. Man, kind of spooky, but man, her instrumentation and stuff, especially on this album, The Forgotten Arm, very Beatle-ish, you know, all that stuff that I love, man. There's those big, fat, analog drum sounds, you know, a lot of vibrato on the electric guitars. She's got her acoustic Gibson just clanging away, and I love her voice, I love her songs, that was the opening track we kicked off there. Dear John, a little bit of that. But man, let's jump to this next track. Oh man, this was a favorite of mine of this album. Goodbye, Caroline, on the P2 Vault, Amy Mann.
Gives up what hurts the most.
Oh, man. Some of y'all might know, or maybe you don't. Amy Mann is married, actually married to Michael Penn. Anyone? Anyone? Michael Penn? Brother of Sean? Ooh, I can hear the groans everywhere there. No, but Michael Penn, great songwriter in his own right. Guy had that song. What if I were Romeo in black jeans, runners in and hip, there's in no myth. Maybe she's just looking for someone to dance with. Poppy Beetle, dude. I don't know. He had a couple hits, early 90s maybe. Anyway, Amy Mann married him, so that's where all those cool keyboard sounds come from. Penn had all that kind of stuff going on. Great songwriter in his own right. Man, this is a great... Where are we next on this record? Where are we next on this one? Oh, man, this is good. Check this out. P2 Vault, this is called Going Through the Motions. You're just going through the motions, baby. Something isn't right.
Something isn't right. I don't know how I know. But baby, it's despite your dog and pony show.
There for the music lover, the songwriter lover, the recordist loving person. A lot to love about Amy Mann, dude. It's now, it's today, but man, just vibey, fuzzy old school tones there. And cool songs, man. Ah, just love it. Well, that is our show for this week, folks, on the podcast. Thanks for joining us. Our thanks to John Reynolds for dropping by for some movie talk to fill us in on the how Hollywood's just going right into the cesspool. Old, just recycling old bad ideas. Oh, man. Email me, philip@philpritchard.com, if you got a comment, if you got a movie that came out recently that I should see. But I'll warn you, I'm very particular. I really pretty much don't watch anything besides, like, This is Spinal Tap, The Godfather, Rocky, and Jaws. That's my starting point. If it's not kind of getting close to that, forget about it. You know, don't send me some weird thing or, you know, whatever. I give everything a chance. I'm also susceptible to the occasional romantic comedy. Not gonna lie to you. So, don't count me out on that. My Big Fat Greek Wedding, good movie. You know, Four Weddings and a Funeral. I'm a kind of a Hugh Grant fan. You know, gosh, what can I say? Jeez, let the emails rain down. Let them rain down. Thank goodness Kurt South isn't here to cut my head off with that comment. Well, folks, did you know that the world is now abuzz? P2FB world is abuzz out there, because you know what's happening? You guys are emailing me and saying, Phil, I know you'd probably never want to come play in my backyard or come play on my ranch. You and the band play a gig out here for all the fans. But you know what happens? I call them right back. I shoot them an email, and I email them a one-page, do you hear me? One-page contract. I once had an agent that sent a 30-page contract in writer for every show we played. I hated it, so that was the end of that. So when you book one with P2, one-page PDF file. Where it is, you know, the price, whatever. You'll give me bottled water, whatever. You print it, you sign it, you mail it back. We try to make it as easy, as fun, as simple as possible. Don't be worrying about who's going to be on stage and what kind of music they're playing. Bring the full band in here. We got all different prices and stuff for each, depending on whatever day of the week, if it's just me, if I'm bringing the whole band. We do it all. So let us know where we can come. Email me, Phil at philpritchard.com, or heck, just call me, 817-733-5256. Well, that has been our show for this week, folks. Thanks for hanging in on the podcast here. We want to thank our new affiliates down there in Corpus Christi. And the ranch here in Fort Worth, and all the affiliates out there, thank you for bringing the podcast on and for making us part of your life. We hope we shed a little enlightenment here, folks, on your life, music, what people are going through out there. Hey, man, that's my story for this week. We'll see you next week. This is Phil signing off. See ya.
And parked your Eldorado. We said hi and kissed with some bravado. I got out my camera and was laughing. Happy it was you I'm photographing. Too close, but baby.